Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is July 27th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 58 of Who's Reading the Organon. We will read aphorism number 4, and I did a really close call getting in here. It wasn't expected my host call-in number, but something always works out. And I wanted to begin with our inspirational quotes. There is a gentleman named Paul V. Harris on Twitter. He has over 70,000 followers. Very popular gentleman. The reason is because he is a man who has survived being burned 85% of his body. And it's an inspiration to all and people master their fears and challenges. I'm giving a quote from his tweet. How to communicate with each other is the first and most important step in a relationship. Thank you, Paul. We appreciate everything you've given to us. There's a couple of more quotes. One is by Agnes Replea. She says, "It is not easy to find happiness in ourselves, and it is not possible to find it elsewhere." Take that one home. And then we have another happiness quote. They say it's anon. Happiness is a choice, requires effort at times. And you could say that again. Okay. Vera, I hear you. You're
Hi,
there?
Hi, Debbie. Yep, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, it was a close call this morning. Few seconds and I got in. Here is another quote. I just met a new person on Twitter. Her name is Sue McDonald, and her Twitter name, profile name, is UST Awakening. She quotes Confucius. Oh, it looks like it was a retweet from Tornado Ferris. Quote, "Tell me and I will forget. Show me and I might remember. Involve me and I will understand." So we are living in a world where we have bringing it to ourselves through our thoughts, through speech, through getting in with something and actually doing something to make it real for you. On the network, we've got a conversation on, and I would like to direct your attention to some news. Midi, and if there is good news, homeopathy is still with us. It's still being practiced in the UK, and it will be heard by the medical service. But there's still a long way to go. We still have a long, long way to go to make it where we want it to be in the world. So we will continue our study together. And I will hand the mic over to Vera.
Yeah, I hope that the sound is okay because I'm hearing you a bit broken up. So
yes, I don't.
So
have,
I hope you
I
can hear me okay.
You sound very clear to me.
Okay. Now we read through
4, right?
We read through 24. Do we need to go over 24
on?
Again or move on?
The only thing we did was not really explore it. It's up to you if you feel like that.
Well, let's just read it over. Let's read it over again and see if there's anything we want to touch on. And if not, then we'll move on. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There remains, therefore, no other mode of employing medicines in diseases that promises to be of service besides the homeopathic, by means of which we seek for the totality of the symptoms of the case of disease, a medicine which among all medicines, whose pathogenetic effects are known from having been tested in healthy individuals, has the power and the tendency to produce an artificial morbid state most similar to that of the case of disease in question.
Okay.
It seems to be pretty much a... Yes, Debbie?
Self-explained? Self-explanatory? Mm-hmm.
It seems to be pretty much a summary again. That it's telling us that our matchmaking.
How come he keeps doing all of these summaries or all of these reviews of the same information?
I think maybe he wants things to be just completely understood because, and the fact is that they're not completely understood because he's introducing a very new concept. First of all, he's introducing a concept that if you want to find out what a substance can do, don't give it to a sick person, give it to a healthy person. For many people, that's counterintuitive.
True.
I mean, we read it and we look at it. He's saying the external diseases sufficiently reflect the external symptoms sufficiently reflect the internal disease that when the external symptoms move, it means the internal disease is moving. That's also a new concept.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. For most of us, at least.
I mean, what it reminds me a little of the basis throwing out to a different form of therapy, but there's a certain concept in there which I think is helpful to understand what's going on. You familiar with the ring muscle method?
Ring muscle.
It's a method that was developed by a lady called Paula Garbour, and it's based on the idea that if in the body you have voluntary ring muscles and involuntary ring muscles. So if you clench your hand in a fist, you're actually using ring muscles. You're squeezing in the form of a ring, bringing things in. When you open your hand out, You're opening out ring muscles. When you purse your lips, that's a ring muscle too. When you squeeze your eyes, that's a ring muscle too. And these are voluntary. Now, inside the body, there's a whole system of involuntary ring muscles, which we can't choose to release or to contract. And the ring muscle method says that if you work an exercise with the voluntary ring muscles, the involuntary muscles, ring muscles inside, will work in sync.
Okay.
Do you follow the idea? So that's the concept of ring muscle therapy and ring muscle exercises, and it's an interesting mode of therapy, and it's a lot of work. But the thing is that the idea that if you do something with the voluntary, you're affecting the involuntary. It comes a little close to what goes on here, that if you do something on the external perceptible, you're affecting the internal imperceptible.
This is really excellent because I'm sure actually you must be some kind of form of feedback release, of instruction, things like that can be used for training and skill of your tense or something, because it is tension and release kind of a movement.
Well, the ring muscle concept, one example that I was given when it was explained to me is when you look at little babies eating Now, when a person eats, uh-huh. there are a lot of internal ring muscles involved. They're around the esophagus, the whole peristalsis of the stomach. Everything that goes on, there's an awful lot going on inside. And they say if you look at babies when they're eating, newborns or very small babies, you see very often they're curling up their whole bodies, they're clenching their fists. There's an awful lot of the external perceptible ring muscles that are actually acting in sync with whatever is going on inside.
Yes, and we probably do the same thing. You can see it in our facial expression. They tell when we're having some sort of an emotion or tension in the muscle system.
Mm-hmm. But I think also,
okay.
let's just revisit the concept of to find out what a medicine can do, you give it to a healthy person. Why? Is that understood? And I think very often we read Hahnemann's words very wisely, but then it turns out that we didn't understand anything. Why give a medicine to a healthy person to find out what it can do?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's almost like it's also got something off or damaged or that needs repair. You're working with, you know, you thought and things on a piece of paper that's already got something drawn on it. You usually have a clear piece of paper to
work. I'm hearing every other word, Debbie.
We're going to have a rough time with this. Yeah, we're having a really difficult connection today. What I was explaining was that I'm actually afraid to change my network connection to see if I could get a better one. If I do, you want me to try?
Now I hear you clearly again.
No. Okay. Well, what I was saying is that when we work with something, we usually clear the slate, clear the page, have a blank page before us so that we can see what marks are coming on the page or what's being taken away or put on there. And if we've already got some things on the plate or on the page, then that might interfere with the action of whatever it is that we're trying to look at.
There's that also, but one of the things that Hahnemann has been telling us, you see, this is why it's so important for his recap aphorisms, because it's like, because we've come to study homeopathy, we think, okay, we read it, we understood it, let's move on. Whereas still, we need to take into account that we are battling against years and years and years of brainwashing. So it's like, yes, we want to move on, we understand, but why give a medicine to a healthy person to find out what it can do? And what Hahnemann has told us in these aphorisms is, he says, how do we define a medicine? We define a medicine as something that can alter the state of health in a person.
You're reading, quoting there, and I'm losing. Today is how really a rough day in getting in.
Yeah. How do we define a medicine? How do we define a medicine?
So
as and something that can alter the state of health.
Right. Can you hear me now?
This is what he's been saying over and over again.
Right. Medicines can show nothing curative besides their tendency to produce morbid symptoms in a healthy person and to remove them in a diseased person.
Before that, you've got to go back before that. Aphorism number 19.
Okay.
In fact, even before aphorism number 19... Let's see. If we go from aphorism 19, disease is an alteration in the state of health of the healthy individual. Okay? Do we agree on that? Disease is an alteration in health. So if we want to track something that works with an alteration in health, then we need to look for something else that can alter health.
Uh-huh.
Those other things that can alter health are potential medicines. Now, you could say when a person yells at you, that can alter health. Yes, that's true. When someone yells at you, it's rather difficult to bottle that or package that or give it in controlled doses. anything that can alter health is having a medicinal effect on you. This
we
is kind of my premise.
Bottle somebody, yeah. We can't bottle somebody yelling at us.
You know, there are some people that I'd like. There's some people I'd like to bottle because I'd like to have access to them whenever I choose. But the idea is that something that alters health is disease,
right.
And something that alters
right.
health is medicinal. So we're looking for things that can alter health. Now, then we get to the point that you mentioned, something that can alter health. Well, if we give it to a sick
right.
person, the picture is confused. If we give it to a healthy person, we can see an exact picture of how this
right.
substance
so,
can
so if,
alter
if,
health. Yeah, carry
yeah.
on.
I was just reiterating again because going, okay. I think that this is worthy of repetition, you know, more than once, more than twice, on various occasions, maybe scattered throughout the years to bring it back into our consciousness, how the medicines and disease are related, and how he came upon these aphorisms and this conclusion, and how to search for remedies that will heal in his environment. So I really think this is a good idea.
But I think also that we need to ask ourselves the questions every now and then. We need to stop and ask ourselves, can we answer these questions? Can we answer the question, why on earth give a substance to a healthy person to see if it will be medicinal? What's the point? Can we answer that question? And not just can we answer it from memory, can we answer it from the heart? Is it a
right.
concept that
right.
we've internalized, or just one that we've learned that this is an aphorism XYZ? Because mm-hmm. if we can't answer it from the heart, we can't practice it from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well,
do we understand? The other question
so,
is, yeah, carry on, yeah. Debbie. I keep interrupting you.
I'm sorry. I was wondering, you know, this is really an excellent proposition. How can we bring this message into our hearts? How can we say it to ourselves and, I'm thinking, test it ourselves so that it becomes real for each of us in our own personal way? So I'm wondering, the fact that we as human beings come into life on this journey and we are constantly tested, we're prodded, we're pushed, we're stressed, we have anxieties and fears and all sorts of things. And those are the challenges that we face. So is our environment, our life situation, bringing us to, what am I trying to say? Help me out here, Vera, because I'm getting
I'm
a,
not quite
idea,
sure. I'm not quite sure. Keep going.
I'm trying to get a comparison toward self, what we as individuals, each of us, are tested in our lives with certain things, and in a way it brings us to how we find our remedy. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to figure it out myself, but I would like to continue with this line of thought, that we can bring it into our hearts and understand it on a personal level.
I really think that part of it is whenever anyone learns
okay.
an aphorism, whenever anyone studies, can you hear me? Hello? Have we lost all together? Hello? Hello? If anyone can hear me, I see that Debbie's call has dropped. And so I'm just going to end this show here. And we look forward to having less technical trouble tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon? With homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brooks on Homeopathy
Stop.
World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.